Good afternoon. Welcome to Senate Labor and Commerce. Today is Tuesday, May 7th. I'd like to welcome with me Vice Chairman Senator Costello, Senator Birch, Senator Gray Jackson, and Senator Bishop is on his way down. They had a conference committee in finance today, so he will be joining us soon. Please disable your electronic devices, please. And I want to thank Dakota Orm for standing up for us today and helping pull this meeting together. Really appreciate her help. And also Nancy Hemingway and LIO operator Doug. You guys are great. We really appreciate you. And so today on the agenda, first we have Senate Bill 11 by Senator Kawasaki. We are going to be adopting a new committee substitute that has rolled in House Bill 113, which is Representative Jackson's bill. And then the second on the agenda, we will be hearing a committee substitute for House Bill 106, Homeowner Renter Insurance Renewal, sponsored by Senator Begich. So thank you for joining us. Senator Kawasaki, I know you and Senator Jackson will be up shortly. But the very first thing we want to do is we're going to move the committee substitute, and then we will have Representative Jackson and her staff, Eric, come up with a brief overview of the new parts of the bill. Then we'll have Senator Kawasaki and Mercedes join us to go through the explanation of the changes in the bill. So first of all, as you two come on up, we're going to go ahead and have a motion by Vice Chairman.
Madam Chair, I move CS for Senate Bill 11, Work Order 31-LS0262-M, be adopted as the working document.
And I will object for purposes of description. And so with that, please state your name and your, obviously, your district, and welcome to Senate Labor and Commerce.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, I'm Representative Sharon Jackson from District 13. I thank Senator Kawasaki and the committee members for allowing the incorporation of the language from House Bill 113 and Senate Bill 11. Our current status allows the state and private employers to give hiring preferences to veterans and members of the National Guard. This bill extends these benefits to spouses and dependents of active duty members and to spouse and dependents of service members that died or presumed dead while in line of duty. Military spouses and their families sacrifice almost as much as a service member. 9 out of 10 spouses are women, and census data indicate they are generally have a college education, and the majority are in the education and healthcare profession. Some of the major hardships are underemployment and unemployment. SB 11 will help these families and incentivize our economy. Senator Kawasaki's staff and my staff will go over the changes with you. And we will be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, so with that, I don't know if you guys are planning on pulling up a couple extra chairs. Okay, you want to at least pull up one chair? Okay, and I also want people to know that we have... Is Sarah Chambers here? Sarah Chambers is supposed to be available for questions. Verdi Bowen from Alaska Veterans Affairs, Kathy Munoz from Department of Labor, and Dana Mancioli, a national columnist, are all supposed to be available to help. So just wanted to let you know who is potentially available in the room.
Sarah Chambers is always sick today, so I'm here.
Okay, thank you, Fred. So Fred Parody will be here instead. Sarah from the Department of Commerce. With that, please proceed.
Hi, for the record, Mercedes Colbert, staff to Senator Kawasaki. So just real quick, would you like me to recap from our March meeting?
Sure.
I'm sure. So thank you very much for the CS. We're really excited about this and for hearing the changes today. So just to recap, in March, this committee heard this bill twice. Following informative presentations from the Department of Defense and the Alaska Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development. And as you said, Fred Chambers is here, Fred Verity is here for any questions about licensure in particular. Ultimately, the overall bill before you today is about making sure the transition to the Alaska workforce is expedited given the typically short stays in the state of military families so that they can get to work quickly when we are facing a shortage of many professional licensed professionals. Excuse me, I'm in a really awkward spot here. Thank you. So we introduced this bill to require the department to report on the progress of drafting and implementing regulations for the temporary courtesy occupational licenses for eligible military spouses. This was following some confusion back in 17 about whether this option was available, because even though some boards had implemented the program, spouses and even occupational board staff weren't even aware that it existed. So ultimately, the goal was to tighten up the language to reflect that other states' reporting requirements would allow the Department of Defense and Department of Commerce legislators and the military families and occupational boards to all facilitate making sure that they can get their licenses as quickly as possible and get to work. And these statutes have been in place since 2011. So we're not really doing anything new. We're just making sure that it works, essentially. And so really quick on the changes to our portion of the bill. Before you, you have a summary of changes from version A to version M. And in section one, this part is totally new to the bill. What section one really is the entire statute that House Bill 28 of 2011 actually started, and that was the original thing that we were amending in the original version of Senate Bill 11. So this part was added to the bill because we wanted to make a simple change of changing may to shall. So you see that on line 9, I believe. Line 10 of page 1 of the CS. And so that whole section 1 is just that same provision that we're amending overall. And we decided to change may to shall, meaning that the department or appropriate board shall issue a temporary courtesy license to the spouse of an active duty member of the armed forces, because this was something that the department had said that they supported on the record here in this committee and in a committee of our companion bill in the other body. And we agreed with that, and the Madam Chair agreed with that too, so here we are. So that just effectively makes sure that all appropriate occupational boards that are willing to do this, that where it applies, will do the courtesy expedited licenses for military spouses. And again, Mr. Parody can answer any particular questions about that, but ultimately this doesn't apply to things like Marine pilots where there are specific requirements for being in Alaska. So it is many, many boards and many licenses that would be applicable here. Section 2 of the bill, of the CS, the only change there is in subsection F, and that is on page 3 and lines 5 through 8, subsection F. The change there from the original version A, we simply just made the report available to all legislators once a year. Before, in the version that you saw in March, we had it to all legislators every other year and to Joint Armed Services Committee members every year. So this is just to make it a little bit more simple and less paperwork for everybody. So, and that was also something that had been mentioned by other members, that they thought it would make more sense to just do one simple annual report. So those are the two changes to the original Senate Bill 11. From version A to version M.
Thank you. I'm going to see if there's any questions before we move on. But I just wanted to point out a couple things that I really like. On page 3, line 2, the department is going to make efforts to inform boards to authorize and issue temporary licenses and the military community. So I really appreciate the efforts there. And also I really appreciate on page 3, line 14, that they're encouraging, a specific point of contact, just for clarity and to ensure that people, establish a relationship with an individual. I think that's really, really helpful that the department's gonna encourage, the board to designate people. We want to welcome Senator Bishop. Thank you for joining us. Really appreciate it. So We just adopted committee substitute for House Bill 11, which has House Bill 113. And Senator Jackson did an opening statement, and Senator Kawasaki's office just let us know of a few changes in Section 1 and Section 2. And so please proceed with the next step.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Eric Cordero, staff to Representative Sharon Jackson, House District 13. The next set of changes, the bill before you has 8 new sections, starting from Section 3 to Section 10. And the sections change 3 main areas of our statutes. The Human Rights Commission laws, basically allowing a private entity that voluntarily want to give hiring preferences to veterans to extend those hiring preferences to spouses of our service members and their dependents. That actually was not in our laws before. In 2018, it went into effect, allowing private entities to let me rephrase that, to not prohibit private entities from giving preferences to members of the National Guard or veterans. And so there could have potentially been a liability there, and they took that away. So this bill extends that to spouses and dependents. So that would be in Section 3 and Section 4. Section 5 amends the State Personnel Act to reference new definitions instead of in Section 6. And what Section 6 does, it adds a definition of what a spouse and what a dependent is. And we made sure to include stepchildren, adopted children, natural children, biological children, because that was a concern that came up during our first hearing in the House. And we also added definitions as to who the spouses and dependents are, regardless of whether it's for a member who is currently serving or a member who died while in service or is presumed dead while in service. Section 7 and Section 8 amend the Personnel Act because currently in the state of Alaska, if the state of Alaska, when it gives hiring preferences to veterans or members of the National Guard, there are two ways in which they do this. One way is if they use some sort of numerical tool, then the person who applies, if they're a veteran or a member of the National Guard, they get an extra set of points once they pass the assessment tool. So if they may get five points, let's say out of, 100 points. If they get 80, then they would get an extra 5, put them at 85. If they're not using a numerical tool, then they basically, the benefit that they get is they get the opportunity to interview. None of that means that a person will get a job. That's not guaranteed. That just means that they get an opportunity to be interviewed. And as Representative Jackson mentioned, military families have a lot of challenges. Spouses are underemployed, unemployed. A lot of them have bachelor's degrees and master's degrees in education and healthcare professions, but because of their constant moves, because of gaps in their resumes, it's difficult for them to sometimes find jobs. And so this bill will help them, will incentivize this and allow our state also to fill those gaps where we desperately need people with those professions. So that's basically what the bill does. And I don't know if Representative Jackson has something to add.
No, but I would welcome questions if you have any.
Does anyone have any questions at this time? I guess I'm not sure how deep I want to drill into this this point system. Is this something that's done elsewhere?
I'll do that.
Yes, most states have a point system for members of the active service members, and 24 states also have that system for spouses. And so Alaska would join one of those 24 states. So this is pretty common, and it also happens at the federal level. And Representative Jackson, I'm sure that she can speak very eloquently to how they do it at the federal level, but it's being done pretty much across the nation. And as Mercedes says, there are a lot of efforts to help military families. the Department of Defense issued a letter to all the state governors asking them, please do something. So there are several efforts being done at the same time, not just in Alaska, but nationally.
Representative Jackson, do you want to add to, any, to that?
Yes. Representative Jackson, District 13. Yes, as Eric said, there's a five-point system if you served, if you're military. If you're a veteran, it's 10 points. Well, with the spouse, it's 5 points, and I think 10 points if it's a Gold Star spouse, meaning their spouse died during the line of duty. There is a section that shows the different states, the system that they have. And there are some points, preference points for some qualified spouses on the federal level. But as Eric said, the Department of Defense noticed this being a big issue with spouses, so they're encouraging our states to take action.
And through the chair, Chairwoman, I believe there's someone from the Department of Labor online that can also answer some of the more technical questions on how things are being currently done right now. But
I don't know if we have any questions on that, so that might be getting into the weeds too much. So is there anybody else who has any specific questions at this time?
Just a comment.
Senator Bishop.
Section 8. I'm glad you've got Section 8 in there. And that's good. I support that.
That's right.
With that, I'm going to go ahead and remove my objection. And so this is now our working document in the committee. So do you guys have anything else to add at this time?
No, but thank you all for taking the time to hear this bill. I see that it will make a difference in integrating our military with our civilian life. As a veteran, and I was a military spouse as well here in Alaska, we feel isolated. So this is a great incentive to add to our economy as well as help the military families. Thank you very much.
Okay, so with that, what we're going to do right now, because this is a significant change from the previous document that we were working with, I'm going to give you guys a day or so just to look it over. I'd like amendments due tomorrow at 4 o'clock. If you have any amendments or anything that you see in regards to the bill, and then we hope to revisit and have this bill before us at 1:30. It should be a pretty quick meeting this coming Thursday, and if it is the will of the committee, we will move it out, which, of course, will be really special because the Joint Armed Services are going to be here on Thursday right after, and so we're hoping to bring some of them down because this is a moment to celebrate. So with that, we're going to welcome you back, and Senator Gray Jackson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to take an opportunity to thank Representative Jackson for her military service. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And I want to thank both you guys, Senator Kawasaki and her staff. You've been amazing to work with in regards to this. Thank you for being flexible and open to incorporating another very important bill now it's technically a committee substitute for Labor and Commerce, but we really appreciate you helping accommodate that and working very well together. And we actually look very forward to seeing you on Thursday. Okay?
Thank you.
With that, thank you very much. So now we would like to welcome Senator Begich and his staff today. So thank you for joining us. Welcome to Senate Labor and Commerce, Senator Begich.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is, for the record, Tom Begich. I'm the state senator from Anchorage District J. And with me is my staff assistant, Lukey Tobin. We have, first, I want to thank you, Madam Chair, for hearing this bill, SB 106. SB 106 addresses an issue that came to my attention through my constituency. The other day, Senator Gray Jackson mentioned on the floor, I guess that was yesterday, that sometimes there are bills that are brought to our attention and their interests brought to our attention by members of our own communities. Those bills are sometimes the ones we don't get around to and don't address, and they slip by the wayside, and our public often wonder what happened to them. This bill is timely, though, because as the senator, as Senator Costello has observed from for the last month and a half during her special order sessions, we deal with crime on a daily basis in Anchorage. I myself am a victim of having my house, both houses that I own. The house I used to own in Sand Lake in her district was broken into. Things were stolen from me, claims I did not make at the time because I knew there might be ramifications to making a claim on those thefts. I had cars stolen from my driveway at the same time. Both of those claims I did not make to my insurance agent because I went and looked for them myself. I ended up finding one of them and then eventually within a week's time finding the other vehicle, my wife's, my car at the time. When my most recent thefts occurred, I also didn't make a claim against my insurance company because I was afraid of making a claim. I didn't realize, though, that that fear was well-based, and that's the purpose of this legislation. In an article that was in the ADN, an op-ed piece, some months ago, Penny Gage, who's online, a resident of actually it says District J in my notes, but she's actually right across the creek. She's actually in Senator Gray Jackson's district. As a renter, she had to retain rental insurance. That rental insurance policy was not renewed as a result of the claims that she made against the policy for a break-in that occurred with that policy. So she talks about it in more detail and can speak to that. But what I want to talk about is why it's important to have this kind of legislation, because when you move into a new home, it's one of the most significant commitments you make, whether you're renting or owning. You want to know that when you obtain the insurance, which we are required by our lenders to do when we own a home, and though not required, is recommended if you are a renter, you want to be sure that your belongings are protected. You want to be sure that that insurance has value and meaning to you because you're paying a lot of money for it. So under our current law, Alaska insurance providers may choose not to renew homeowners insurance or renter insurance policies on the annual anniversary without notification prior to the cancellation. In other words, they can just do it and just tell you we're not renewing, which is what happened in the case of Penny Gage. It's not the only time it's happened. In my discussions with the Division of Insurance, and I should mention here, my former staff assistant, Jeffrey I, did a lot of that initial work for me. This isn't the only time this has come up. It's come up other times in the past as well. I know the Lori Wing hires here. She helped us craft this legislation. And I would say, Madam Chair, the original bill that we brought before you had some changes that the director recommended that we have put in a draft untitled CS, which is your version M. So that's the bill I hope that you will consider today, which would be the CS we've given to your staff and which we provided to you. I'll just add a couple more quick statistics, and then we can get into the sectional analysis of the bill. What SB 106, though, would do effectively is restrict an insurance company's ability to not renew a policy based on the first claim filed within 3 years of the policy being initiated. This would ensure that one-time crime victims are not penalized by their insurance company for filing a claim. And that's the essence of what this bill does. Some of the corrections that are in the CS address elements like making sure the language comported with our own existing law, making sure it's sort of the fine details were done appropriately, and to ensure there would be no fiscal impact to the state as a result of the legislation being passed. And those were things that, of course, I know your concern about the budget as well as our concern makes that timely. With that, Madam Chair, if you don't mind, I'd like to turn the sectional description over to, and this is the sectional for the CS, if I may.
Okay, if I can just interrupt just for a moment. I missed somebody online, and I just want to speak to them for a moment.
Sure.
Dana, I know that you're here as a national columnist, and I know you were here for SB 11, and I know Dana Manciali, and I know Tammy Perot with the Department of Events. I just want to make sure that you guys know that we're going to be taking public testimony on Senate Bill 11 on Thursday at 1:30 p.m. So, of course, you can listen into this testimony, but I apologize. I hadn't noticed public testimony, so we will be taking public testimony this coming Thursday on that bill. I just wanted to say thank you so much for being here, and I also wanted to recognize Lori Winghire in the audience. And thank you for the interruption, and please proceed, Senator.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, Senator Tom Begich for the record. I do want you to know that I brought this bill to the attention of the industry before I introduced the bill. I asked them to look it over and to provide me comments and thoughts. They did not respond back to me at that time, and that was in February. I finally introduced the bill, I believe, in mid-March or early mid to late March. And then Director Winghire took a look at the bill and then developed her recommended changes, which I received on Friday. And so with those changes in the CS, I would say the sectional, if we're going to go through the sectional now, would relate to the CS for Senate Bill 106 that we have proposed.
And, Senator, we're going to pause just for a motion from the Vice Chair to adopt the CS. So,
Madam Chair, I move CS for Senate Bill number 106, 31-LS04, 76-M before the committee is the working draft.
And I'll object, Madam Chair, for purposes of discussion.
Thank you. Please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to turn it over to Lukey Gail Tobin, who is my staff assistant working with this legislation, to walk through the sectional.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Lukey Gail Tobin with the Office of Senator Begich. So the CS sectional analysis is what I'll be walking you through. That first section cleans up previous language and moves notice and applicability language for non-renewal of a personal and business insurance policy to a new section, which that new section is below Section 2. Section 2 adds a new section prohibiting an insurance company from considering the first claim filed against the policy in preceding 3 years as a reason for canceling that policy. This still allows the insurance company to not renew or they may not cancel without notice if the insurance company has manifested a good faith effort to renew the policy or the premiums of the policy are not paid. Section 3 just aligns that definition of personal insurance with AS 2136-460I. Section 4 amends the codified Alaska law, so Sections 1 and 2 apply to new insurance or insurance policies renewed after the effective date. That Section 5 then goes on to allow the Director of Division of Insurance the ability to implement new regulations outlined again in Sections 1 and 2. Section 6 gives the Director of Division of Insurance the authority, as outlined in Section 5, upon immediate passage of this legislation, and Section 7 provides an effective date of July 1st, 2020.
Madam Chair, that is the description of the bill, and we are ready and open for questions should there be questions from your committee.
Okay. I definitely want Lori Winghire to weigh in a moment, but first I want to take any questions from committee members at this time. Senator Begich. I'm sorry, Senator.
Too many bees today.
Senator
Begich,
Haber. And then there was two Jacksons, a Senator Jackson and a Senator Gray Jackson. It's confusing today. Anyway, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could the cancellation can still happen after the 3 years? With 0 to 3 is you're safe for making a claim and not being canceled, but they can cancel it after if you've made a claim after year 3.
Right. Madam Chair, through the Chair, Senator Bishop, first, I want to be clear, and the insurance industry representative has corrected me on this. This is non-renewal. They're not able to cancel. It's non-renewal, and that's what the bill speaks to specifically. So Section 2 speaks to is that should there be other reasons to cancel insurance, it wouldn't prohibit the insurance company from doing so, but the non-renewal provisions for the first 3 years.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Excellent. So if you two don't have anything further, I'm going to ask Lori Winghire to come on up, and then I'm going to briefly open public testimony because I do see Penny Gage is online, even though I didn't notice public testimony. I'm going to allow her to speak, and I will announce public testimony. Welcome. I know you've been busy, so appreciate you being here.
No problem.
You know the drill.
For the record, my name is Lori Winghier. I'm the director of the Division of Insurance for the State of Alaska. Madam Chairman, I'm happy to take any questions on this bill.
Do you mind weighing in?
I can tell you, I mean, I can't tell you what to do, but I can tell you that with the crime epidemic that is happening in Alaska, Mat-Su, and other areas, people are having their insurance non-renewed. What this bill does is basically give them one free pass. These are crimes that are, these are acts that are being taken against consumers, constituents, which really they don't have a choice. They don't have, there's nothing they can do. If you buy a trampoline and the insurance company says, we don't write trampolines, or you buy a Doberman and the insurance company says, we don't write Dobermans, they've made a conscious choice and you have made a conscious choice. When your home is broken and your vehicle stolen, you didn't make that choice, and that's what this bill is doing.
Senator Birch.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Thank you for being here this afternoon, Ms. Winghier. Do we have an idea of the frequency or the incidence of this occurring? You know, obviously we hear anecdotal and reporting on break-ins and theft and so forth. But do you have a any sort of a sense from either consumer complaints or otherwise that indicates that this has happened, you know, 100 times or 500 times or 50 times in the last year or some period of time?
Through the chair, Senator Birch, I don't. We've had some complaints, maybe a dozen, where the consumer has called us, but certainly not in any proportion to the number of crimes that we hear have happened.
Okay, follow up. Yeah, I have some trepidation about kind of inserting ourselves in the relationship between you know, the insurer and the insured, and you know, throwing some sideboards on there. I mean, it doesn't seem unreasonable, but I mean, would that be a cost component then through the chair? Is the insurance company allowed then to say, whoa, I've got some additional exposure because now I've got somebody that actuarially I would like to, you know, drop them as a customer, but I can't, so therefore I got, you know, elevate my rates somehow. I'm just wondering how that works and how closely it's monitored, or if it's monitored through the chair. Mm-hmm.
Through the chair, Senator Birch, they most certainly could. An insurance company could come back and say, we're raising your rates because of the break-in. Mm-hmm. They can only raise them by a certain percent without giving you notice, 10% without giving you notice, to allow you to look at another insurer. So they can't just take your policy from $200 to $1,000 without telling you why and without giving you proper notice to allow you to look for different insurance.
Okay, fair enough. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I can tell you that I've had numerous people come to me and tell me their insurance rates have gone up because of the crime epidemic and their car insurance rates. So anyway, it's definitely a concern out there, and I just sure wish more corporate people, or you know, the APD would get more you know, resolutions, and or the Chamber of Commerce or corporations, because every time I ask them, they said they're corporate down in New Jersey or California or whatever doesn't want people to know the massive amounts of crime that are going on inside their stores. And it's just really difficult because they don't want to chase the customers off, so they're caught between a rock and a hard place. And the men in blue, you know, say that they want a repeal of SB 91, but there's problems because of the current mayor and the current union leadership that they don't want to bring forth a, you know, repeal effort on the crime bill. So, but all of this is, you know, boiling back down to the crime epidemic. And I know I have had my house breaken into, and it's awful. It's an absolutely awful thing to deal with. So I'm really happy that the bill and the discussion is taking place right now. I want to see if there's any other concerns for Lori Winghier.
I do.
Senator Bishop.
Madam Chair, thank you. Lori, I know, I mean, Senator Birch asked a question, but to you or the bill sponsor. So we're not tracking it. We haven't tracked any data. Or has the insurance industry got any data, the frequency, number of claims that have been canceled in a year due to the crime in Anchorage statewide?
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, we have not tracked that. We could, if the committee wishes, issue a data call. It'll take a couple weeks to ask them exactly how many cancellations or non-renewals or what these are they have done in Anchorage because of the crime. but we have not tracked that information. We generally don't get the notices of cancel or non-renewal in the division. They go to the insured, but not to the division. So the only way the division knows if someone calls and asks, is this legal? Can they do this? What remedies do I have?
Thank you.
Senator Bishop, would you like that information?
I'm going to be gone in 2 weeks.
I don't think it'll hurt to get that information. I just think it would help. We're not sure exactly, you know, when session's going to end and what the status of this bill is, but I think it's a super, super important conversation to have. I know this is kind of unrelated, but I can tell you I couldn't get an umbrella policy because my insurance company denied us three times because of what I do. They said they wouldn't give me an umbrella policy, which I just find just unbelievable. It was strictly based on my job, and I find that unacceptable personally. But Senator Costello.
Thank you. I want to thank the sponsor for introducing the bill. I think that's information that would be interesting to have, but for me, I think this is a consumer protection bill, and I'm not going to withhold any support based on how many Alaskans have been negatively affected by something happening that's not their fault, and then they lose their ability to renew. So I'm encouraged that you worked on this legislation because I know you bring a lot of experience, you know, to the plate. So I just wanted to put that on the record.
Thank you.
Senator Bishop?
Just to follow up, the reason I was asking for the data, Ms. Heyer, because you know the respect I have for you and what you do at the division. It's we're blessed and lucky to have you.
Thank you.
State of Alaska and the people. But I'm kind of mixing apples and oranges here, but it's on the same topic as insurance. It hadn't been that many years ago you came to us and said, you know, we injected how many million into the insurance pool to help drive the rates down, right, to help anchor the sole tenant here, and I kind of see this as the same thing here to a degree. We didn't create the epidemic, but I do think we have some standing and responsibility as we're in a 2R. I need a little latitude here, Madam Chair.
Please.
With this crime, the two are linked, this bill and the crime bill, in my opinion. It's not the homeowners or the renters' fault. It's not the insurance industry's fault. I think it's a time where we need to come together and kind of protect all of our interests, both the business, the homeowner, the public, because if we're going to grow this state, who's going to come here if they can't get insurance because of the crime? We got to, you know, I mean, they're all intertwined. I support the bill, Madam Chair. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. I appreciate those comments. What's come, you know, to my mind, I wanted to do, these guys know I wanted to do a couple weeks on crime and commerce priorities within the caucus and between the House, the Senate, the majority. It ended up being a Title IV where we ended up taking Title IV because alcohol is such a significant problem in our state that we chose as a committee to do that. Instead of do the crime and commerce, but to me this falls hand in hand. And if for any reason we're going to be down here longer, I will be having hearings on crime and commerce. And I think that this bill is really important. I do think it's part of the crime package. And I also think that we need to consider extending it to businesses. I don't know if businesses are complaining that they're losing insurance, but I can tell you that I have heard astronomical stories. When I go in to lots of stores, you know, whether it's the big stores or the smaller stores, the sporting goods stores, I walk out there completely shooken up after I've talked to the managers. And almost anybody in the store will talk to you about what they see with theft and the significant insurance loss, you know, that they've had. So I would even consider expanding this to businesses as well. But we as a legislature have to get a handle on better criminal law at this point in time, because a lot of this is the responsibility of the legislature to give the tools back that were stripped from them, rather than emboldening criminals for theft. And, of course, the Drug Act
epidemic are super soft on drug laws. They've got to be fixed. We have to, because that's what's driving just about everything they say, from property crimes to vehicle theft to burglaries. And so it's our responsibility to toughen our criminal laws as well. So it does go hand in hand. I really, really want to say, first of all, thank you. Thank you for being here today. And I look forward to working with you in the future. I'm going to ask the committee, just 1 second, I got a little note here. Okay. Pass this along. With that, I just want to say thank you, Lori, for being here, and I'm sure I will be having you back in the near future. Okay,
thank you very much, Madam Chairman.
So I'm going to go ahead, and I know I'll have to extend public testimony because it was not noticed, but I do want to hear from Peggy Gage because she's been online. So I'm going to go ahead and open public testimony in regards to this bill. So, Peggy, thank you for being here. If you could.
Hi.
Yeah, if you could just state your name and your testimony. Thank you for being here today. I'll give you a couple minutes, okay?
Okay, thank you, Chair Reinbold and Vice Chair Costello, and thank you to Senator Begich for the opportunity to provide comments today on this bill. My name is Penny Gage. Originally from Sitka, I've lived in Anchorage for 4.5 years. My partner and I rent an apartment in a duplex and have been quite happy here with access to the trails, walkable to downtown, and with an excellent view of the dog park right across the street. When I moved in January 2018, we got renter's insurance with State Farm, like our lease required. And a few months later, on June 22nd, in the middle of the workday on a Friday, someone hopped our fence, used a tool from our shed to break a window, and took everything of value we own. I don't know if they were in the house for 15 minutes or 2 hours, but I do know they took our own suitcases and plastic totes, filled them with our belongings, and walked right out the door. They knew what they were doing. They took all of our jewelry, laptops, passports, mementos, clothing, a hunting rifle, and random things like soap and towels. The police came right away and took fingerprints, but there have been no leads. When our lost inventory was all said and done, we filed a claim totaling nearly $10,000 with State Farm under our renter's policy, which was a godsend. It helped us replace key personal and professional items. But toward the end of the year, the company informed us they wouldn't renew our policy past 2019. I asked them why and found out that they had decided we weren't worth the risk since we filed a claim within the first 6 months of starting the policy with them. This was an internal State Farm policy that I had no way of knowing beforehand. This was surprising to say the least. Our insurance payments were always made on time. We live in what I consider to be a pretty safe area, and the home had never been burglarized before. And after the burglary, we took more safety precautions. We got the locks changed, we paid to install a camera system, and added locks to the backyard gates. But even still, the insurer will not cover us. And the only reason they didn't drop us sooner is that they failed to inform us before the required deadline that they were planning on removing us from the policy. So I'm a pretty proactive person, as you might be gathering. I reached out and spoke with someone at State Farm's corporate office who was very considerate but basically told me that it was their underwriting guidelines and there was nothing that could be done. She told me I could reapply with them once I'm incident-free for 3 years. 3 years. I filed a complaint with the state of Alaska and my local agent, who was very nice to work with, but her hands were also tied. The state of Alaska Division of Insurance representative I spoke with told me that an insurance company cannot dissuade you in any way from filing a claim that can set them up for breach of contract. But while they won't do that, I think cutting you off after you file a first claim is basically the same thing. So I wrote my op-ed in January because I felt this policy and process were unjust. A renter or homeowner is not at fault in a burglary. Doesn't renters and homeowners insurance exist for these very scenarios? While I respect private insurance companies' interest in being profitable, cutting off an insured client after a single claim just seems wrong. I'm willing to pay a higher premium, but they just cut me off completely. And this seems to be, as some of you have been mentioning, an underexamined consequence of Anchorage's ongoing problems with property crime. Residents are victimized once by criminals and then re-victimized by insurers who deem them ineligible for future coverage, which feels like a slap in the face. When this type of insurance can be required by landlords and mortgage lenders, how can you expect victims of crime to be able to comply? I hope the legislature takes a hard look at these policies. We rely on leaders like you to safeguard the public. Now, I've worked in the legislature before, and I know how these things work. Whether or not this bill moves forward in the process, or this is the only hearing it ever gets, I appreciate the attention to this important issue that I'm sure is affecting many of my fellow Alaska residents. Thank you very much.
Penny, we are very sorry for your loss. We hear about this on a regular basis, sadly, about crime. And we have Senator Costello, who does Voices of a Victim, and I think this would be an excellent Voices of the Victim for the Senate floor. Thank you for bringing this to our attention. Thank you for your proactiveness. And I think there's quite a bit of support for this, actually, in this committee. So I don't think this is the last time this bill is going to be heard. So anyway, just wanted to say thank you very much, and please stay tuned. I'm going to go ahead and leave public testimony open on this bill. And Senator Begich, did you have anything else to add at this time?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Tom Begich, for the record. I do have just a couple quick responses to some of the things that were said, and I want to reinforce something that Director Wingheyer said, and that is an insurance agency does have a recourse. They can raise your rates. I make claims on my auto insurance all the time. My rates go up. I expect that to happen. That's the natural give and take of an insurance policy. That's why this seems so egregious to me, and that's why I responded to Penny Gage's story, but a story that I've heard from others. And it's, frankly, the reason why I never filed a claim. So the answer is it is a personal relationship between you and the insurance agency. But there need to be some parameters around that relationship. In my auto insurance, I cannot be canceled. My auto insurance cannot be canceled for making claims. And if there's going to be a non-renewal, they have to explain it to me why they're not renewing me. No, what they do is they raise the rates. And that's what this bill essentially is saying, is that at the very least, at least for that first 3 years, on a claim that has merit, you cannot cancel the policy. So I thank you so much for this hearing and for the opportunity to hear from Ms. Gage and from my staff. I truly hope that the committee moves on this bill, and I look forward to your guidance and leadership on this issue, which is just an unintended consequence of the criminal issues that are so vast that we are dealing with today. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you. Does anyone else have any comments? I'm going to take just a very brief at ease because I need to ask a quick question, okay? So just a very brief at ease. Okay, we are back on the record. So I would like to formally announce that I'd like amendments due by tomorrow. This is only a three-page bill. It's a very, very easy bill to read. And because it's fresh in our memory, I'd like amendments due by 4 o'clock tomorrow. And then I'm also going to add this to the agenda on Thursday, okay? I was going to try to make it a very special military day, but to me, military people are being impacted, and I know we have a tremendous amount of military people in my area, and I know they are being impacted tremendously by crime as well. So I think this adds nicely to the agenda, so if the committee is okay with that, we will have public testimony as well as amendments. Well, amendments will be due tomorrow at 4 o'clock, and this will be added to the agenda on Thursday. So with that, I have left public testimony open. Do you want me to take a time out? Oh, I'm back on record. Is that what you mean? Did I never? Okay, brief at ease. We're back on record. Senator Bishop?
I remove my objection.
Thank you, Senator Bishop, and thank you. So with that, we will be meeting here after Joint Armed Services. We will be meeting back in this room on Thursday at 1:30 with hopes of for sure moving SB 11 out, and then I will have to test the will of the committee in regards to this Senate Bill 106. Okay. With that, we are going to gavel out. It is 2:20. Thank you.